Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 14, Texts 6 to 8, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace. I'll read text 6 and 7 first because there's no commentary on them. Text 6. Yudhishthira uvacha sampreshito dvarakayam jishnur bandhu didrikshaya nyatam japunya shlokasya krishnasya chavicheshitam. Maharaj Yudhishthira said to his younger brother Bhimasena, I sent Arjuna to Dwaraka to meet his friends and to learn from the personality of Godhead Krishna of his program of work. Gata sapta dhuna masa bhimasena tavalujaha nayati kasya vahedur naham vededam anjasa. Since he departed 7 months have passed, yet he has not returned. I do not know actually how things are going there. So, api,
api,
deva,
deva,
prashena,
prashena,
adishtaha,
adishtaha,
saha,
saha,
kalaha,
kalaha,
ayam,
ayam,
upasthitaha,
upasthitaha,
yada,
yada,
atmanaha,
atmanaha,
angam,
angam,
akriyam,
akriyam,
bhagavan,
bhagavan,
utsisrikshati,
utsisrikshati,
api,
api,
weather,
weather.
That's W-H-E-T-H-E-R, not W-E-A-T-H-E-R. Can't tell just by hearing it. But you should all know, anyway, I hope, that it's not talking about the weather. Deva Rishina,
Deva Rishina,
by the demigod Saint Narada,
Adishtaha,
Adishtaha, instructed,
Saha,
that,
Kalaha,
eternal time.
Eternal time.
I am this. Upasthitaha.
Upasthitaha.
Arrived.
Yada.
When. Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Of his own self.
Angam.
Plenary portion.
Plenary portion.
What does that mean, plenary portion? That's a common term in Srila Prabhupada's writings. What does it mean? What does plenary mean?
Full expansion.
Full, yeah. So, it refers to Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva, or Shiva Tattva, or Shakti Tattva. Angams, that's sponge. Akriyam,
akriyam,
manifestation.
Manifestation.
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead.
The personality of God.
Utsisrikshati,
Utsisrikshati,
is going to quit. Is he going to quit his earthly pastimes as Devarshi Narada indicated? Has that time already arrived? Purport. As we have discussed many times, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, has many plenary expansions, and each and every one of them, although equally powerful, executes different functions. In Bhagavad Gita, there are different statements by the Lord, and each of these statements is meant for different plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions. For example, Sri Krishna, the Lord, says in Bhagavad Gita, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. to deliver the faithful, to annihilate the miscreants, and also to re-establish the principles of occupational duty, I appear in every age. If I should cease to work, then all humanity would be misdirected. I would also be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all sentient beings. Whatever action a great man performs, common men will follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. All the above statements by the Lord apply to different plenary portions of the Lord, namely his expansion such as Sankarsana, Vasudeva, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Narayana. These are all he himself in different transcendental expansions. And still the Lord as Sri Krishna functions in a different sphere of transcendental exchange with different grades of devotees. And yet, Lord Krishna, as he is, appears once every 24 hours of Brahma's time or after a lapse of 8,640 million solar years. How do you say that? Is that 8,640,000,000,000? Does anyone know? Anyone? Beyond my ability to reckon. That many solar years is one 24 hours of Brahma's time. He appears once every 24 hours of Brahma's time in each and every universe, and all his transcendental pastimes are displayed. All his transcendental pastimes are displayed in each and every universe in a routine spool. But in that routine spool, the functions of Lord Krishna, Lord Vasudeva, etc., are complex problems for the layman. There is no difference between the Lord's self and the Lord's transcendental body. The expansions execute differential activities. When the Lord, however, appears in his person as Lord Sri Krishna, his other plenary portions also join in him by his inconceivable potency called Yoga Maya. And thus, the Lord Krishna of Vrindavan is different from the Lord Krishna of Mathura or the Lord Krishna of Dwaraka. The Virat Rupa of Lord Krishna is also different from him by his inconceivable potency. The Virat Rupa exhibited on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is the material conception of his form. Therefore, it should be understood that when Lord Krishna was apparently killed by the bow and arrow of the hunter, the Lord left his so-called material body in the material world. The Lord is Kaivalya, and for him there is no difference between matter and spirit because everything is created from him. Therefore, his quitting one sort of body or accepting another body does not mean that he is like the ordinary living being. All such activities are simultaneously one and different by his inconceivable potency. When Maharaj Yudhishthira was lamenting the possibility of his disappearance, it was just in pursuance of a custom of lamenting the disappearance of a great friend. But actually, the Lord never quits his transcendental body as is misconceived by less intelligent persons. Such less intelligent persons have been condemned by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, and they are known as murhas. That the Lord left his body means that he left again his plenary portions in the respective dhams, transcendental abodes, as he left his Virata Rupa in the material world. Api devarshina dishta sakalo yam utasthitaha yadatmanongam akuiram bhagavan utsisrikshati. Is he going to quit his earthly pastimes as Devarshin Narada indicated? Has that time already arrived? Yudhishthira Maharaj is speculating. He's wondering about this. Om Jnanati Nirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Nirantam Nirantasya Shalakaya. I don't really know. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. This is the science of the subject matter of Supreme Lord and his devotees who, to superfluous vision, might appear to be mundane or mundanely motivated, as we see, or we will see in the next verse. Yudhishthira Maharaj speaks about Krishna that by his mercy, all our kingly opulence, good wives, lives, progeny, control over subjects, victory over our enemies, and future accommodations in higher planets have become possible. So it seems that the relationship between the Lord and his devotees, it's like that of mundane people. A mundane person approaches someone of more power, position, and opulence, flatters him, and gets some facility from him. And it may be thought that bhakti is just like that. In fact, it appears that most people, or most Hindus, think that that's what bhakti means. That you approach a certain god or a certain bogus guru or bogus avatar, and you flatter them, and you sing songs to them, and wave some incense at them, and they throw some, or they arrange, by their mercy, you get some material benediction. And that is what is considered bhakti by materialistic people, and they may have some feeling for the demigod or the bogus avatar or whatever it is that they worship, but the root of it all is selfishness. So, without understanding Srimad Bhagavatam or Shastra, or anything for that matter, from pure devotees, there's certain to be misunderstanding. Srila Prabhupada has in his purport discussed some of the points which Srila Jiva Goswami establishes in his Sandarbhas. It's very suitable for all of you who are studying here the Sandarbhas, come here for this purpose, and many of the points of how we are to understand Krishna. Krishna can be understood through the Srimad Bhagavatam, but even the Srimad Bhagavatam, if we just read it, we're certain to misunderstand it, unless we follow the parampara. If we just read by ourselves, we're certain to misunderstand it. Just like, for instance, well, there's so many things. Krishna is dancing with the gopis. The whole Mohini avatar description, if we don't read it from devotees, then we're going to misunderstand. And it's true with not only with the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the topmost shastra, Bhagavad Gita, which is sometimes described as the introductory knowledge of spiritual life, even that is certain to be understood, unless it's understood in the parampara. The discussion of what's being described here is Yudhishthira Maharaj's affection for Krishna and Krishna's affection for him and for all the Pandavas. So it appears that Krishna is partial to the Pandavas, and actually he is. It appears that in that case that, well, the relationship between Krishna and the Pandavas is, they might be very great people, but they're more or less motivated in the same way as anyone else in this world. It's not very spiritual. They have their friends and they have their enemies. So that's not very spiritual. Maybe for this reason, or one of the reasons why impersonalists conclude that the Absolute is impersonal, because if there's an If there's any relationship with anyone, it means that every relationship with every person, that means that that modifies our attitude towards other people. Because there's no relationship without attachment, and if there's attachment, then there's also aversion. That's there in the topmost spiritual existence also. The attachment of the devotees to Krishna is accompanied by aversion to anything which is an obstruction to their meeting with Krishna or serving Krishna. So as long as there's persons and there's relationships, then there's attachment. That's what bhakti is all about, attachment to Krishna. That also means aversion. And this is the raga dvesha. This attachment and aversion is the substratum of material life. And in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna himself speaks about raga dvesha. What's the next word? Well, it comes up several times. Vimuktaischa. One should be a spiritually advanced person is free from attachment and aversion. But it appears that Krishna himself has attachment to the Pandavas and he's averse to the Kauravas. So, what's going on here? Then, what's so spiritual about Krishna? He may be very great, he can show, that's what Duryodhana thought, that he can show some forms, he can show something, but ultimately he's just another person. Just another person. So all these apparent contradictions have to be understood through the parampara. We find in Bhagavad Gita himself that Lord Krishna talks about his partiality to his devotees right after he talks about his impartiality toward everyone. What's that verse? Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stinakriya. He says, no one, I'm equal to everyone, and I don't hate anyone, and I don't love anyone either. And what's the next line? Ye bhajanti tumam bhakta maite jeshu chapyam. Then immediately afterwards he says that, well, actually, I do love my devotees, and if anyone who worships me, I reciprocate with that. So it appears to be contradictory. So how is this to be understood? Is Krishna correcting himself? Do we have to throw out that first statement? Well, you have to understand through the parampara here. Srila Prabhupada in the purport to the verse that we're reading today states, this is gives us some insight, there are different statements, in Bhagavad Gita there are different statements by the Lord, and each of these statements is meant for different plenary portions of all portions of the plenary portions. So not everything applies to everyone in all circumstances, not even Krishna himself. And as the acharyas comment, that the first line of that verse, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, that refers to the Antaryami Paramatma, who is the Upadrashta Anumantacha. He is the seer of everything, and he allows. Okay, you want to do that? Okay, alright. But that's his function as God, that he's neutral. Everyone gets what they deserve. But in the case of his devotees, then he's partial to them. That's him as Krishna. And Krishna is God, as God is generally understood, and more. He's more than just God. Or if we say God here means as God is generally understood by people who don't understand God, that he is someone who we worship and he gives us what we want and he punishes the sinful. Yayata amam prabhadyante tams tathaiva vijamyaham. There's another statement by Lord Krishna that he reciprocates accordingly. He reciprocates with everyone. Those who worship him in love, he reciprocates in love also. And we find in the Bhagavatam, it's described that Krishna is overcome or controlled by love. Nasadhyati mam yogo na dharmam sankhyam buddhava na swadhyasta pastyano yata bhaktima morjita. He says that all these other things, yoga, dharma, sankhya, study of shastra, austerity, renunciation, none of these can please me in the same way as bhakti unto me. So Krishna is equal to all. And he's also inclined to his devotees. But then he's equal to all, because anyone can become his devotee. No one's banned from being his devotee. Even Duryodhana, if he had said to Krishna, well, you know, actually, I should surrender to you, and I do surrender to you, then Krishna would have accepted it. It's not that he said, well, no, you've made so many offenses. He may say that, just like we find, Jagai and Madhai, they made so many, so sinful, and they offended Lord Nityananda. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ready to forgive them. Not that they go on sinning, but he's willing to accept them. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda are so famous as being so merciful, because even persons who were very offensive, they were eventually forgiven. Even as Gopal Chapal, he was so offensive. And in the beginning, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would ask for forgiveness, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you can have your leprosy and suffer in hell for millions of lives, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. But eventually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relented. Why is he so cruel to Gopal Chapal? It seems because Gopal Chapal was an offender to his devotees. We find also in Bhagavad Gita that Tanaham Vishita Kruram Samsareshu Naratama Shipami Adasham Ashubham Asuishriva Yonishu. Sounds like Krishna's very cruel. Those who are envious, I throw them into the demonic, the lowest of mankind, I throw them into the demoniac species of life. So it sounds like it's really, really harsh here. But everyone gets what they deserve. It's not that Krishna's abandoned them. They also get a chance. They're not abandoned. Even though it seems that he's very harsh, but people are getting what they deserve for their dvesha, tanahan dvishita, kruram, they're nasty and hateful and cruel. So they go to hell. But actually they like that also. There are certain people who would prefer to be in hell, it seems, than to be in heaven. And we see that people that they choose to listen to hellish music. They choose to take intoxication, which puts them in hellish consciousness. They actually like that. If we offer people that you can live a very cultured life with very, even on the material platform, that there, people can choose. There are many beautiful things, materially speaking. There's art and aestheticism, but many people, they prefer to music which is hellish. And they prefer to decorate their bodies in a style which actually looks totally demoniac. In the Western countries, it's part of normal life. And they take pleasure in... They go to movies, and the movies in India also are full of sex and violence and rape and all horrible things, but people like them. They're in hellish consciousness, so it's actually very suitable for them that they go to such a place. Instead of going to a nice place where people are nice, they take pleasure in being nasty. I know myself, even as a child in my upbringing, it was considered, it's a kind of plus if you're nasty, if you're mean. For you also? No. It's like the, if you can be mean and nasty and cruel, I mean, that was considered among certain people I knew to be something good, and we have. But, thrown in hell. Turn up your cell phone, or burn in hell forever. So, people actually want that. That's Krishna's kindness in another way. If they send them to heaven, they won't like it. What's all this being nice? And in heaven, they have to follow some rules of culture and proper behavior. They don't like it. So Krishna's actually very kind to them also by giving them, people of hellish mentality, the opportunity to go into a hellish situation. So Krishna is impartial, and he's partial also. And that sounds like word jugglery, but it's fully possible for Krishna. Everything that might seem impossible, that's quite possible for Krishna. All contradictions are resolved in him. This is another of the features of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jiva Goswami and other acharyas have pointed out that he's the greatest of the great in size, and the smallest of the small in size. He is the most loving, he could be the most cruel also, apparently. Although the difference is that the love and compassion and kindness on the material platform is on the substratum of that is all envy, personal motivation. Whereas Krishna, whatever he does, is good. And that comes out in this discussion, comes in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, where Parikshit Maharaja, Shukadeva, isn't the Supreme Lord partial, like the demons say, by killing the demons? Isn't he partial? It doesn't seem to be a proper quality of Bhagavan. And Shukadeva Goswami explains in great detail how the impartiality of the Supreme Lord is not compromised by his partiality. In other words, everything he does is good for everyone. And even his killing the demons is good for them. They also get benefit from that. Everyone who comes in contact with Krishna in any way is benefited. So Krishna, he comes to this world. He has nothing to do. He's not attached to or involved in any work. Namam kamani limpanti. But then again, he says that if I should cease to, he has no work to do, there's nothing to do, but still he appears to work. He comes, yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sujanyam. He comes to remove or to restore dharma when there is adharma. And particularly, paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata dushkrita. He does this by the method of uplifting his devotees and destroying the demons, which, again, it appears to be partiality, but that vinasha, that destroying of the demons, that doesn't mean that they're totally destroyed and totally finished with no hope whatsoever, but rather he destroys their disturbing activities and puts them in a situation where he removes them from the situation in which they're causing disturbance and gives them an opportunity to start again with the mercy that they get from being involved in it. So Krishna is all merciful, he is all good, and he is all kind. But to understand this, we have to understand what is the nature of reality, what is the nature of spirit, what is the nature of Bhagavan. And for that we will first have to clearly understand Lord Krishna's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, which begins with Krishna rebuking Arjuna for his kashmala, his impurity. What is that impurity? Kripaya avishtam ashupurna kulechanam. Arjuna's kindness, kripaya avishtam, he's absorbed in compassion. And Krishna says, his eyes are brimming with tears. And Krishna says, you nonsense. So, this doesn't seem, what is this? Arjuna's thinking, we don't want to kill our gurus, we don't want to kill our brothers, we don't want to create a bad situation in society, it's not right, we shouldn't fight. And he's full of compassion. And Krishna calls him a damn fool, to quote Srila Prabhupada. And damn fool number one, to be precise. this is nonsense. Why is it nonsense? Because he hasn't understood the nature of compassion. Because he hasn't understood the nature of reality. So everything has to be understood through the eyes of Shastra and through the eyes of the Acharyas. Otherwise, if we don't understand through these eyes, then we're certain to misunderstand. It's a completely different perspective. If we hear mundane people who are trying to be nice talk about compassion, but their compassion is, the very nature of compassion in this material world is that compassion to one means harm to another. Just like we may, if we favor one group, that means we disfavor another. Or just like the Mother Teresa is famous as being so compassionate and so kind, but she wasn't so compassionate and kind to the animals that she had every day, because she had no clear conception of kindness, or the animals that she fed to the people in her homes, which her kindness to the people in her homes meant that she hastened their journey to hell, actually. So she's praised by foolish people as being very compassionate, but she had no actual understanding of what is compassion, and therefore, although the perverted reflection of compassion may have been felt in her heart, but she was actually doing harm to others. And Krishna, he rebuked Arjuna for his similar compassion. So all these, of course, these are subjects which, if we say like this, even many of our devotees will become upset due to a mundane attachment to ideas of what is good for others and what is compassion. The Krishna conscious outlook or the Shastric outlook is quite different from that of mundane people. And in fact, almost everything Srila Prabhupada says about everything goes against pretty much everything that modern society stands for. Srila Prabhupada is for capital punishment. He is for stratification of society, that not everyone should be equal or have equal rights. For women's non-independence, which if you even say that in much of the world today, then you might be subject to violence, actually, because people, it's definitely very strong verbal violence, because people think this is a great affront to human civilization. How can you say that? So Srila Prabhupada was against democracy and so many different ones. So what is it? Is Srila Prabhupada what they would call a religious fundamentalist? Yes, but the word fundamentalist has also been misused. And so to be fundamental, to be, means to be fully, to stick to the basics and to be fully absorbed in it, that is very good if you actually know what the basics are. Of course, if you have a perverted understanding of religion, which most religious fundamentalists do, then you're being fundamentally attached to something which is not right is going to give a bad result. But then the relativism, in which the idea that everyone's opinion should be given equal, you should respect everyone's opinion except fundamentalists' opinion. That's what relativists think. But that also is violence, that's also harmful, according to Krishna. Being very fair and very nice is a contamination. So one has to understand very clearly what is actually beneficial for everyone and what isn't, based on Shastric understanding. So that is received through the parampara of what is the actual purpose of life, what is the actual meaning of life. One cannot actually benefit oneself or anyone else unless one understands these things. So I finished that. Is there any question about this, please? Yes? Speaking about what?
Different things Prabhupada wanted to establish, like he was not for democracy.
Srila Prabhupada is not for democracy, yes.
Economic,
that's correct.
Demon crazy,
that's correct.
At the same time, we see, he established GBC, we have an election of.
No, we don't have election GBC members. What can you do?
I know some issue comes up.
They vote among themselves. How do you understand that? Well, he gave some measure in the GBC body. And GBC members are supposed to be acharyas. The Prabhupada said that. So yes, he did give some measure. When democracy means equal rights for all, having a GBC body, that's not a democracy. I guess you could call that an autocracy. There's a few people at the top who decide things. Yeah, anything else?
Talk about being both the compassion to the people.
I spoke about what, sorry?
About being both the compassion.
Falsely compassionate, yes.
Because at the same time, I see the world is constantly, they are in such a way that they think that they have to be very clean, very nice to do, very good. To help in the language, right? In this way.
Sometimes the devotees, they also ask in such a way, in a nice way, to avoid the devotees. They should manifestation of real compassion.
To behave nicely towards others is a manifestation of real compassion.
No, the devotees, they behave not nicely.
They behave not nicely.
In a very cruel way.
In a very cruel way to others. It's my mercy that I'm dealing with you in a nasty manner. Because I'm making you humble. Well, I was speaking about one aspect of Maya called false compassion, and you're speaking about another one, that devotees misbehave with others. Yeah, so what's the question? What is the proper balance? Everything, first of all, one should understand everything very clearly. Without proper knowledge, one cannot act properly. One who has got proper knowledge And then everything he does will be for the benefit of others, whether it appears kind or cruel. For one who's not properly situated in that, everything he does will be harmful to others, whether it appears kind or cruel. Yeah, I'm trying. It's not working properly then. Okay.
It is said that Krishna is Bhagavan.
It is said by?
It is said in Chaitanya Bhagavan that Krishna is Bhagavan.
Yeah, there's a verse quoted there, Sanskrit verse quoted.
This is the intention of the person.
Bhavagran Janarda.
Yeah. So, similarly, social workers, even though they don't know what is for the benefit of the people, they don't have knowledge, but their intention.
Their intention is good. Yeah. Is it? Well, the intention of social workers is good, so Krishna accepts that. No, actually, their intention is based on false understanding. Their intention is to do good, but the underlying basis of it is envy of Krishna. And until that is rectified, that everything one does is simply a manifestation of envy of Krishna. And of course, we could say that social workers, they have a better mentality than Hitler, for instance. But many times the social workers, they actually, I gave one example. Another example is they go around and they hand out condoms, or they stand up for the rights of people to do sinful things like abortions. So without knowledge, it may seem very good, but it's a disaster. Therefore, in human life, it is the duty of every human being to get proper knowledge of what he's doing. Without that, he's not really a human being, misusing the human form of life. That bhavagrahi janardana, that verse is that, what is that? Murko vadati vishnaya pandita vadati vishnave. So it's not in the matter of feeding chicken to people in the name of doing good for them. It's how one performs acts of bhakti. So the well-intentioned social worker who goes to a lot of trouble to help women have the right to have abortion, goes to hell for that. They may think that I'm doing very good and these people who are opposing that are very bad, but they're wrong. As the English saying is there, that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Srila Prabhupada also quoted. So it is the primary duty of a human being to get proper knowledge. Without that, all this so-called compassion, as Srila Prabhupada said, when people were in Haridwar, when people were rebuking Srila Prabhupada for not being compassionate, Srila Prabhupada is speaking very strongly, as usual. And Prabhupada said, your compassion is like blowing on a boil. Have you heard that example? That if you have a boil, have you ever had a boil? You know what a boil is? Farah? Okay, I had one right here before. It was extremely painful. The whole thing was. So some of you have a. So you might get a momentary, slight relief from the terrible pain, but the real relief comes by applying a knife and cutting out the poison. So like that, the real relief from the pain of material life can only come by the santa evasya chinyanti. What is that? Next slide. Manovya sangam uktibihi. Sadhus, is they cut the material attachments or the mental attachments with the knife of their words. That is the compassion of sadhus. That is the definition of sadhu, one who cuts with their words, material attachments. Anything that we do or say that increases people's material attachments is not kindness. It may appear to be kind, but it's not kind at all. This should be very clearly understood. In our movement today also, there's a lot of promotion of what is basically mundane welfare work. And devotees who are joining nowadays may be under the impression that the main purpose of our movement is feeding school children so that they can get they can study and get a job, and this is the best thing that ISKCON does for anyone, which is how a lot of our preaching, or so-called preaching, goes on. But giving children the opportunity to study in a demoniac school, demoniac subject, so that they can follow the demoniac way of life, that may be very pleasing to the society of demoniac people, but it doesn't give people the knowledge that they need to get free from material attachments. So, promoting this kind of idea that school children should get good jobs, you should train them well so they can get good jobs, it's just the opposite. It's like Arjuna's compassion, it's a contamination. So, Hare Krishna. It's time to finish there. Oh, you had a question? There's, according to the watch, there's 35 seconds. What's your question?
You speak about human freedom. So I heard that in ISKCON we have
you heard
for women. So
you have what?
Women committee.
Women what?
Committee.
Women committee. You heard that in ISKCON we have a women committee. Well, there's a Vaishnavi ministry, which was previously called the women's ministry. Yeah, these are controversial subjects. That's why we have to understand everything very clearly. How there's Param Dharma, which is Atma Dharma, and there is the Swadharma of this material world, of Varnashram Dharma. So, as long as we're in this world, we have to... Vaishnavism transcends Varnashram Dharma. But as long as we're in this world, we have to follow some of the formalities of this world, including those of Varnashram Dharma. So what, who, and under which circumstances people can or should act in a manner that goes beyond Varnashram Dharma. That's a very sukshma vichara, requires fine understanding. But from what I can see, without that fine understanding, we're trying to apply, without that very fine understanding of how Vaishnavas should live in this world, if we try to apply the highest principle without being steady in the lower principle, then it's going to create chaos, as it has with the Prakriti Sahajya Sampradaya, for instance, who say, well, we're all just liberated, therefore we don't have to follow any rules of ordinary society. The whole Varnashram institution, the restriction of mixing between men and women is there because the sexual impulse is that which destroys spiritual life. So that has to be kept in check. And if we simply say, well, we're all liberated and so men and women can all mix up together, then we're going to become Prakriti Sahajiyas with the result that we don't, or the result that in the name of devotional service we actually promote adhara. So personally, I'd like to see a lot more emphasis in our movement, especially in the Western countries, before emphasizing women's rights. overcoming divorce, which is rampant in our society. You should see to that first. Anyway, like I said, these are controversial subjects. So, it's and complex subjects also. So, we'll finish there. And all that is just the rest of the time. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.